Bytes, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
On Saturday morning, September 18th at 11:15, it's the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast of Eleanor R., the First Lady of the World, broadcasting live from St. Rita's Church in Racine, the Radio Theater. Saturday morning, September 18th at 11:15.
Support for WGTD comes from Quick Trip. They've got you covered with fresh fruits, coffee, desserts, and more, tailored for your busy life. Quick Trip, they've got you covered. Visit quicktrip.com to find the nearest location. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Mike Falkowski, a former KUSD school board member, Sammy Rangel, the life technician and executive director of Life After Hate, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School superintendent, Joe Manji. Now here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. Here in the southeast corner of Wisconsin, we are lucky to have both UW Parkside and Gateway Technical College available for our public higher education system. And full disclosure, WGTD is housed at Gateway Technical College in the Kenosha campus. But there are other parts of the state, especially rural areas in Wisconsin, that have long depended on the UW system of two-year colleges. In 2017, those colleges underwent a transformation that our guest today will describe for us. So Roger C. Schoenfeld is a program director at Ithaca SNR, where he is responsible for research and advisory work that addresses libraries, scholarly communication, museums, and the academic research enterprise. He has testified before the U.S. House of Representatives on government publishing, advocating for strong approaches to digital preservation, and he's co-authored collaborated on three different books. Along Came Google, A History of Library Digitization, that's a difficult word to say, which was published this year. He also wrote JSTOR, A History in 2003. And he worked on a book that I think would be fascinating and I was unaware of until now, even though it was published in 2000. It's called The Game of Life, College Sports and Academic Values. He has degrees in library and information science from Syracuse University and in English literature from Yale University. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you. So nice to be with you.
Did I get everything right on that intro, or is there anything you want to elaborate on?
No, that's perfect.
Okay. So we're talking to you today about the recently released report entitled Consolidating the University of Wisconsin Colleges, The Reorganization of the University of Wisconsin System. And you did not write this alone. Who else was working on it with you?
Well, the case study of the University of Wisconsin system, I wrote with my colleague Jane Radicke. And this was part of a broader work that looked at several different consolidations, public university consolidations, that also included co-authors Melody Andrews, Cappy Hill, Sasanya Jones, and Martin Kurzweil. It was a great collaboration this year.
Okay. And the first thing we should probably do is just describe what the UW colleges are for our listeners. As I mentioned in the introduction, you know, we have an embarrassment of riches here in the southeast corner of the state. And so for most students, they either just go directly to UW Parkside or they start out at Gateway and transfer to a four-year campus, either Parkside or some other one. So tell us about the UW colleges. Where are they? What do they do?
Yeah, so there are or were 13 two-year college campuses. They are largely in smaller communities, more rural communities within the state. They had for some time served as an access point, as a great access point for students, not only to receive an associate's degree, but also in many cases to be able to transfer for a four-year degree at one of the UW universities. And they were organized as a single university or single part of the UW system called the UW Colleges. And the story we'll tell today is a little bit about what's happened to that that system. Mm-hmm.
So I noticed on the listing of them, so there used to be, or maybe still is in some form, one at UW-Waukesha and a UW-Washington County. Those are the ones that are closest to Milwaukee. But then there are some in really rural parts of Wisconsin that probably even some of our readers don't know about. I think there was is there a UW-Baraboo and some others like that? Mm-hmm, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. So there were 13 and they're sort of scattered all over the state. So when were the first sort of rumblings thinking that the UW colleges were going to be in need of some kind of reform?
Yeah, so, well, there had been a process for some time going on to try to bring some various kinds of reform to the colleges, certainly dating back, you know, five years or more. There was demographic change that, you know, we could see, you know, at least in retrospect, we can see pretty clearly that there's been demographic change, especially in some of the rural areas of the state, that as a result, there are fewer traditionally college-aged students in those parts of the state. And so over the course of time, you know, there were initiatives that were put into place to try to address some of that. So yeah, we can trace it at least back to 2010 that there had been demographic change that was.
Mm-hmm. And there's more to come, actually, because I think a lot of people listening may not have heard of this term, but we call it in higher ed, we call it the demographic cliff. In the 2008 recession, birth rates fell precipitously and they really haven't fully recovered. So people are just having fewer children or no children. So there just aren't as many young people, particularly in the Midwest. That's the place where the drop is pretty intense. So anyway, I guess the writing was on the wall. There was already fewer students and there are fewer students in the pipeline, so to speak, probably in all colleges, not just in these rural colleges. So how did you actually become involved with this? You are stationed in New York, so that's not really part of the Wisconsin colleges system. How did you become involved in reporting on this process? And then I'll just tell the listeners, the report itself I'm going to put in the show notes, and there's also two other reports and a sort of a summary of the three of them about Georgia and Texas, but you were only involved in the Wisconsin one, is that correct?
I was most directly involved in the Wisconsin one.
Yeah. So how did you end up reporting on Wisconsin and these mergers in general or consolidations?
Yeah, so, you know, your listeners may not realize that there have been, and in part it's because of that demographic cliff that you were just referring to, we're seeing various forms of consolidation and mergers, and in some cases, even institutional closures, really across U.S. higher education broadly. And, you know, my colleagues and I, we wondered if the challenges that have been faced by the sector during COVID, whether some of those would further accelerate this set of patterns, right? So, you know, especially the institutional closures, there's a lot of small independent private institutions, private not-for-profit institutions that have been closing. There's other kinds of issues around mergers and other forms of consolidation. So we've been speaking with the Lumina Foundation about a number of things, and they were interested in funding a project focusing on consolidations within public university systems like the University of Wisconsin, but, you know, also like the Georgia system and the Texas system, and looking at the impacts of these consolidations on equity, on access, et cetera. And so as part of designing this project, my colleagues and I, we decided to look at these three case studies. We thought they had some similarities and also some meaningful differences between them. And then to try to look at what could we learn both within each of these three state consolidation efforts, but also in comparing across them. For me personally, issues around organizational governance and organizational change have been real passions of mine for some years. And I see this as a really interesting question about how do we best provision education, higher education within state systems whose populations are changing substantially over the course of time.
Mm-hmm. And again, I just want to kind of set the scene for listeners. So your company Ithaca, is it SNR or S plus R? How do you say
We say SNR, yeah.
Okay.
But it is a plus sign, yeah.
Yeah. And you were commissioned to do this report. So then, you know, you were asked to do it. How do you do research like this, especially since you're actually not in Wisconsin? So how did you and your colleagues go about conducting the research that went into this report?
Yeah, so it may be worth saying, so we're a not-for-profit organization, and we do a lot of work on higher education issues. That's really our bread and butter. We also do a little bit of work on cultural organizations. And these questions about, you know, how are institutions adapting to technological change, demographic change, the economics of the sector, like these are at the heart of the work that we do. How can higher education institutions continue to maintain their vibrancy and societal relevance, you know, against all the various changes that we're looking at right now? On this particular project, my colleague Jane Radicke and I, for this case study of Wisconsin, we worked very closely together on the research. For this particular case study, we did a lot of research on, you know, the news media, the journalistic coverage of this consolidation over the last few years, and of the UW system over the last few years. So you'll see, readers will see in the footnotes a lot of references to Wisconsin journalists who did a great job actually covering these changes in real time. We also did some work on student enrollments and demographics and things like that, a little bit more quantitative. But for me, the most exciting part of this project was the opportunity to speak with a number of leaders within the UW system during the time period that this consolidation took place. We spoke with a number of the chancellors of the various campuses and of the UW colleges. We spoke with the then president of the UW system. So we really had a chance to kind of hear a bit, and we anonymized their comments so they could really speak to us candidly. And I think that those kind of firsthand reflections that they were able to offer us, I think that really added a lot to the story that we were able to tell here.
Right. And if listeners, if you do click through and take a look at the report that's going to be in the show notes and on the Facebook page, you can see that there is a list of the people that they've interviewed. It's actually really transparent. But I find the process fascinating. Maybe listeners won't, but now let's get into the meat of it. So what exactly is happening? Wisconsin, like most of the Midwest, has fewer children. That means fewer traditional age college students as they get older and finish high school, and more older people than it used to have. So how did this help lead to the UW college's consolidation and reform?
Yeah, so the result of those fewer children and actually the result of migration patterns as well, I believe is a piece of the puzzle also. The result is that enrollment in many of the individual two-year college campuses had declined really substantially over time. So by the time that we're talking about, this is roughly like 2016, 2017, enrollment had so I'll give you a couple of examples. One of these two-year college campuses saw enrollment decline by more than 50% between 2010 and 2017. So this is not just, you know, a 3% decline, a 5% decline. For that campus, we're talking about a kind of, I'll call it a kind of catastrophic fall off in enrollments. Fall 2016 alone saw an aggregate decline across all 13 of these UW college campuses of more than 20%. So these factors actually predate the, if you look at it, these are actually predating this, the effects of the effects of the 2020, the 2008, 2007, 2008 recession. And mm-hmm. So, you know, anyway, so efforts were, there were a lot of efforts underway already. I think this is really important to say, right? It's not that anyone just noticed one day, oh my goodness, enrollments are declining. Like this had been playing itself out for a period of time. There were efforts that were underway to try to address these shrinking enrollments. There was expanded marketing and outreach that the UW colleges were taking on. There were efforts to improve transfer pathways to four-year institutions to make it more appealing to start at the two-year colleges. And there was, among other things, there was a regionalized approach to how they were going to manage these colleges so that groups of two or three or four of them would have sort of a dean for that group of college campuses rather than a leader for each campus separately. So, you know, it's possible that over time, these reforms might have made a difference, might have, you know, we might have seen a kind of leveling off in these enrollment declines. They might have made a difference if there'd been enough time to let them play out for 5 years or 7 years or 10 years. But what was happening was these demographic changes were just continuing. And, you know, they were seemingly inexorable. And, you know, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, you know, there was a backdrop of challenging state politics around, you know, is strong enough action being taken in the face of these declines?
Right. I'll have more to ask and say about that in a minute, but I just want to reintroduce, you're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the consolidation of the UW colleges system with Roger Schoenfeld of Ithaca S&R is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again there, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. And again, I will be linking to this report on both the Facebook page and in the show notes if you want to access it. So we've set the scene here. Fewer young people, especially in rural areas where the UW colleges are located. So what was next when this sort of all came about? Who are the main players driving change in the system?
So structurally, the two-year colleges, they were organized as a statewide system. The two-year college campuses were organized as a statewide system, and they were overseen by a chancellor who worked in Madison. And there was a proposal that had been floated several times to consider breaking up this structure and presumably reassigning some of the campuses to the responsibility of a nearby four-year university. And this may be a little bit in the weeds, but each of the four-year UW universities has what's called a chancellor that leads them. And there was also a chancellor that led all of these two-year colleges collectively. And all of those chancellors reported up to the president of the UW system. So just to kind of set the organizational
structure. And so I just want to just say right off the bat, I'm thinking about this as an organizational challenge, very, very unique. Like 13 campuses scattered across the state. I would imagine that whoever that chancellor was spending all their time in a car going from campus to campus, or at least in phone calls all the time, because 13 is a lot. I mean, I'm just thinking about this from the perspective of maybe a school administrator, like a superintendent of schools. 13 buildings is a lot of buildings to manage, but usually they're within a close geographic area. So I'm just thinking about sort of the logistical challenges of this, separate from whatever the other problems might have been. So this is an interesting structure.
I think that's a very, very wise observation because on the one hand, you know, just getting all around to all of those campuses is a huge amount of work. And so presumably it's almost impossible to have the level of presence that, you know, one would want to see from senior leadership. So I think that's that tension was definitely present. Now, some people thought, okay, if we take this approach, if we break up this structure, if we reassign these campuses, you know, in twos and threes to the nearby four-year universities, you know, some thought this could reduce administrative costs. What they had done over time, the administrative costs were an important part of this story. Okay, so over time, there had been efforts to streamline, you know, financial systems and the library and all the various things that could be streamlined were being streamlined. And there was a kind of a lot of these administrative services were provided centrally out of Madison rather than in a duplicated way across these campuses. So there was a thought that if we do this now, if we reassign these campuses, we can kind of eliminate that Madison administrative overhead and help with the budget bottom line. There was that. That was a piece of the puzzle. But I have to say, the bigger vision when this proposal was actually floated, when the then system president, Ray Cross, when he finally introduced this proposal and decided that, you know, he was going to recommend moving in this direction, his motivation was, as he tells it, was much more about strategic benefits than about cost savings. And you know, as an example, you know, if a four-year university that now has responsibility for two or three or four of these two-year campuses, they could potentially now introduce four-year programs, a new kind of program that was never available before, a nursing degree, a tourism degree, in places that never had them, and therefore generate enrollments that were actually better matched to the needs of the local economy. And this kind of program realignment work, like do we have the right programs in the right places for the actual needs of the students and the economy that could support their ability to have a career in that place, mm-hmm. was I think as much one of the underlying drives of this initiative.
Right. And those two programs that you named, like tourism and nursing and sort of nursing assistant things, that those are the two big industries in the rural areas in a lot of places. Tourism is huge in some of those places. And also, you know, as the population ages, nursing care ends up becoming a big part of it. So thinking about, like you said, careers, degrees that led to careers that make sense for people who want to stay in the area. I think this is always a concern for families that are rooted anywhere, is whether their children can stay there, whether they get priced out of the housing in more urban places, or whether there's work for them, meaningful work for their kids that want to either stay there or move back if they go somewhere else. So I think this is a really interesting angle on this. Like, I'm sure some people can look at this and say, oh, they're just trying to, you know, drive these colleges out of business or something, but it's much more complicated and nuanced than that, I think. So the receiving campuses, so there are lots of UW campuses. How many total four-year colleges? Is that part of this? I can't remember.
Yeah, so there were, I think, eight. Mm-hmm. There were seven of the four-year colleges that received
right.
The colleges. Not all of them did. For example, UW-Madison didn't have a two-year campus that was assigned.
And I don't think Parkside did either.
That's right.
So so the other campuses, for example, I said earlier that Washington County and Waukesha County UW campuses were somehow partnered with UW-Milwaukee.
That's right.
So so was there any sense in the reporting work that you did about how the UW campuses, you know, received this, that a lot of times people get directives and say, okay, now you're going to do this. You know, were they sort of partners in this, or were they okay with this idea? Was it helpful to them? Did it open up possibilities? That kind of thing. I'm sure it's different at every campus, but
yeah, I do think it was a little bit of a mixture. I think some of the universities that were receiving responsibility for, you know, one or more of these campuses clearly saw strategic benefits, other kinds of opportunities that this could open up for them. But I think it's, you know, I think it's also important to remember that there were, these were like, these, the integrating a two-year campus with a four-year university, that was a substantial effort, and it required a lot of work in order to manage that part of the consolidation. So, so, you know, without getting too deep into the details, this included things like, how does tenure shift, or, you know, rank and so forth shift between one campus and another. So the faculty governance elements, faculty tenure status elements, there were questions about how individual academic schools and programs would be organized after a merger would take place. There were questions about how student affairs responsibility would be managed. So it was just that this was not like, okay, here you go, here's here, you know, hello, chancellor of a four-year university, you know, here's a two-year college, good luck. And then that chancellor and their team had to really figure out, how do we make this work? And so there were a lot of cycles, a lot of bandwidth went into that. And in some cases, there was a need for additional structure. This all took a lot of time, a lot of leadership attention. And, you know, it's a little hard for me to say for sure, but I got the sense from talking with at least some of the chancellors that there may have been some of these cases where the cost, those costs might have been seen to outweigh the benefits. So I think it's a really, you know, it's a really mixed scene. It may have been better for the system as a whole and better for the colleges, but it, in some cases for the UW universities, there may have been a few for which it was, okay, we have to do this to be good citizens of the system.
Right. And I think one of the interesting parts of this story, and you have a really interesting table graph that sort of illustrates this, is that the changing demographics are not just about fewer young people, but also about different kinds of students coming from different backgrounds. So for example, the number of Latino students with a background from, you know, various parts of Central and South America has grown tremendously. And it initially, as with most patterns of immigration, those students were centered in Milwaukee specifically, but the larger cities, and now they've sort of moved to rural areas. Do you have anything that you could share with us about that change?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad you asked about that, because these, you know, issues about demographic change, not just in terms of absolute numbers, but in terms of the mixture of different population groups, has been an important part of the broader study. In particular, in our case study in Texas is one that readers interested in that issue will want to take a careful look at. In terms of Wisconsin, I mean, I don't know how widely it's appreciated, but the percent, for example, at UW Milwaukee, you know, over the course of the time period from 2010 to 2019, which includes the integration of these additional 2-year campuses, their enrollments went from 77% white and 6% Hispanic, as the census category uses, to 66% white and 11% Hispanic. So, you know, just in terms of enrollments, it's clear that there have been some meaningful shifts over the past, you know, over the past decade or so. And, you know, I think this is, we heard about this in at least one or two of the interviews that we conducted, where there was a sense that one of the opportunities that the merger would indicate was that there was an opportunity to build programming and outreach that would better serve a kind of changing demographic and indeed a more Latino population in some of the even in some of the, you know, areas outside of major cities. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how specifically that can play itself out following the mergers.
Right. I'm going to take another quick reintroduction break right now. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the consolidation of the UW colleges system with Roger Schoenfeld of Ithaca SNR is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So we can't really have a discussion about education, public education in Wisconsin, without talking a little bit about the politics behind it. So Wisconsin politics around these issues have been contentious for at least the last decade, and I think probably far earlier. How has this played out in this particular political context? The demographics seem to have driven the consolidation, but is there anything about the sort of Madison versus the rest of the state that is kind of the way politics are painted sometimes that was borne out in this plan?
Yeah, and you know, I'm not an expert in the politics, in the state politics of Wisconsin, but what I can say is that, you know, the primary goal of the consolidation really was to improve access and affordability to some degree to higher education for the state. And, you know, there absolutely was a motivation around, you know, these budget cuts that were regularly facing the UW system in this period of time, budget cuts driven, as I understand it, by the state legislature's views about the system. So I don't think there was an effort to try to reduce the costs to, you know, I don't think that this consolidation was an effort to reduce costs to the extent suggested by the budget cuts coming from the state. Like that's it wasn't a one-to-one kind of correspondence there, but I do think that it was, I do think it was very important for the university systems leaders to be able to demonstrate to the state legislature that they were taking drastic actions to try to reform, modernize, and, you know, and to the extent that it was about cutting budget, you know, address administrative costs. And so I do think there was some of that in this. But again, as I said before, there was a much more strategic motivation. So there was this kind of communications effort and these budget cuts effort, but there was a much more focused motivation, which was that these demographic changes rather required substantially new approaches to avoid, you know, to avoid future cuts. The state government is projecting an aging population. There's economic shifts taking place in small towns and rural areas where many of the colleges were located. And these declining enrollments were just affecting the viability of this UW college's system. And so I do think there was this strategic motivation to figure out, you know, how do we serve the population as it will be rather than the population as it once was? And that plays itself out against these, you know, against this political backdrop without any question, as you suggest.
Right. And I think, you know, these communities that were relying on these two-year campuses probably have been going through over various periods of time, some kind of consolidation of their school districts, their K through 12 districts as well, because there just aren't nearly as many kids. I mean, families are smaller than when a lot of these school districts were formed. And for the most part, that consolidation had to happen. Sometimes kids have to take really long bus rides because they've had to consolidate schools. We've had some schools in not even terribly rural districts. The Eagle, Wisconsin school district was almost completely shut down for a while because they decided to defund it and try to consolidate with other school districts nearby. So there's a lot of this kind of thing, I think, that has already been happening for decades in rural districts. And what's also interesting, I read in the report, and maybe I read too much into it, but the fact that the population of Hispanic students is increasing in rural areas means that some of those school districts, those K through 12 districts, are actually repopulating a little bit. So that might have an effect on these rural campuses as well. But yeah, it's really sort of a problem-solving approach that the administrators were taking, it sounds like. They were like, okay, we see that there's an issue. We want to cooperate with the legislature, so they'll want to continue to support these smaller campuses, two-year campuses in some format, and we're going to figure out a way to make it work for everybody, or try. Is that right? So I want to know, what do you see, having studied this for a while, as the pros and cons of this consolidation? Are there any winners and losers in this effort? Has it been a win-win situation? Or you know, how does this work out for the campuses themselves, the communities around them, the students, the professors, whoever?
Yeah, it's so complicated, and it's so soon. It's still so soon. So that's one of the challenges that we actually had in this case study, was that especially because of COVID, you know, many of the benefits that we might have hoped to see, they've been delayed, hopefully only delayed, but at least delayed. And so, you know, I want to be very careful to say that I I think it's going to be another year or two now to really be able to assess, you know, the pros and cons fully. Look at a structural level, there are a number of institutions where some of that program integration or program reprogramming that we've spoken about has begun in ways that, you know, look, stand to benefit the students who over time they should find it easier to access higher education in their parts of the state and more, hopefully more applicable kinds of higher education in their parts of the state. So that's, I think that's potentially the biggest win here is actually for the two-year institutions, the communities that are most directly served by these two-year institutions. But as I say, some of that I think has been delayed. And, you know, depending on budgets and resources, some of those, you know, may not come to pass. There's been, you know, discussion about other kinds of reorganizations that might follow on this one. And, mm-hmm. you know, that will, we'll see if this even has a chance to play itself out. Yeah, I do think when you ask about, you know, sort of pros and cons or winners and losers, like, I do think it's important just to humanize this for a second, because, you know, we can talk at a structural level, and I think it's important that we stay mostly at a structural level, because that's the, you know, that's ultimately what the point of any organizational structure and merger consolidation is about. But anytime there are these kinds of changes, there also are human costs and human benefits as well. And, you know, that can be at the level of, you know, at a senior level, several of the chancellors took on additional responsibilities. And, mm-hmm. you know, the chancellor for the two-year colleges eventually departed, right? So there's, mm-hmm. you know, at that kind of human level, there's also, of course, you know, among faculty members, there's been all sorts of changes to who's in which department, and is there a department chair, or is the department merged across the two-year campus and the four-year campus? And, you know, what does that, so someone who is in an English department is now in a different English department, or someone may find themselves with a different dean, or, you know, all sorts of things like that. And even when those things are done in all the right ways and as smooth as possible, there's just a, you know, there's just a human cost to those kinds of changes as well. But again, structurally, I do think it's important to say that that, you know, we'll see whether these program integrations and some of these other strategic benefits really do play themselves out. That's my hope, certainly.
So one of the interesting things about this story in general is that it illuminates that I think Wisconsin is kind of unique in the sense that it has a whole separate system of technical colleges that's different from this. So, for example, my husband for a while was a professor at the College of Lake County in Illinois, which is enormous. And it is actually both of these things. Like, you can do auto technician, or you can be a history major in your two-year degree. Those things are all on one giant campus. This is, I think it's kind of a unique system that there's a system of technical colleges like Gateway, and then you have these UW campuses. Did that play out at all when did you have to sort of disentangle that when you first started this work, or what can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, so Wisconsin is probably unique in at least two ways that I would highlight. One is that the state has an extremely well-developed system of higher education for the size of its population. And that would have been true 20 years ago also. I mean, just in terms of the amount of, not just the amount of institutions, but the amount of capacity is, I think, really substantial. And in a sense, like was suggests, you know, earlier generations made big investments here. Mm-hmm. But the investments that were made, yeah, absolutely. It's unique in the sense that there have been, you could look back and say that there were three or possibly four higher education systems in the state of Wisconsin. And today there's two, there's the technical colleges and the UW system. So, you know, you have some larger states like California has three systems, a mm-hmm. University of California system, Cal State, and then a community college system. Other states like New York really have one state, a SUNY system that includes research universities and state institutions, comprehensive institutions, and community colleges as well. So, you know, there's different structures and different models for how higher education is organized. I do think that the Wisconsin model is pretty unique. And as I think you know, there are questions even today about, you know, is that structure the right structure, or should there be further consolidation mm-hmm. to bring it all together?
Well, just as a note, I'm sure a lot of the listeners listen to the monthly conversations that one of my colleagues has with the president of the Gateway Technical College System, because his office is right across the hall from the studio. So every month they meet and get an update on what's going on that campus. And it's I find it fascinating, because even though I grew up in Wisconsin and one of my brothers attended one of the technical colleges, I just didn't really understand how it all worked. And it's so integrated into the local community here. And I assume that's true of all the campuses, just like, you know, consulting with local businesses to find out what kinds of training they need and putting that together. So that's a little different and a little off topic. Sorry about that. So just kind of the final thing I always try to finish an interview with is something where we can think about an individual. So so if you're a high school senior in a rural Wisconsin county right now, who doesn't really want to live away from home or can't afford to do that, how does this consolidation affect you? Would you be able to, I mean, I know it's a little bit of speculation on your part because this isn't what you were studying, but, you know, do you think that student can benefit from this change, or is it kind of depends?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, as a researcher, I'll say I'm a little disappointed. We weren't able to include a student perspective in the case study. So I have some of the same questions that you're asking myself. But let me you know try to walk this through. I mean, the hope is that this consolidation would create some real benefits for that high school senior in that rural Wisconsin county. Real benefits that would allow them to find stronger programs closer to home that would help them find the kinds of well-paying jobs that, you know, that in their region demand for those jobs is growing, mm-hmm. right? So like that was at the heart of what I think they were trying to build here. And, you know, if will that happen? As I say, you know, that's still playing itself out. I think there are a couple of those two-year college campuses, a couple of those four-year universities where that partnership really has, you know, they've built new programs. They're offering new programs in new ways in new places. For those institutions, you know, hopefully that will lead to enrollments that will stabilize and, you know, hopefully even grow over the course of time. And the kinds of benefits to students that would come from that, right? All of a sudden, you can live at home or close to home and attend an institution that will deliver the kinds of education that will let you build a good life for yourself close to home. But I'm looking forward to following over time how this plays out.
Well, if you write another report, you'll have to let me know so we can have you back. Thank
sure.
you, Roger Schoenfeld of Ithaca SNR. You've been listening to WGTD HDFM. This discussion of the consolidation of UW's college's system is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. And you're invited to listen again there in case you missed some parts or you want to hear it again. Or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in the discussion there. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Okay.
It's going to be a great show, ladies and gentlemen.
Interrupt. interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air. President Roosevelt has just announced.
This is Leon Pearson speaking for the Pan American Coffee Bureau, which represents seven good neighbor coffee-growing nations, and presenting to you American families your Sunday evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am speaking to you tonight from the White House at a very serious moment in our history. The cabinet is convening at